This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
And now, the Mole Mystery Theater, presented by M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tender skin.
Good evening. This is Jeffrey Barnes, welcoming you to the program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. The story I have selected for tonight's program was received with so much acclaim when we first presented it last year that we are bringing it to you again this evening. It is a story that deserves to be ranked with the greatest classic mystery stories of all time. Thomas Burke's The Hands of Mr. Ottermole. It concerns a Jack the Ripper sort of character who in the year 1890 terrorized the city of London with a series of brutal murders. Arnold Moss, star of the recent Broadway presentation of The Tempest, will narrate.
Pardon my ignorance, Mr. Barnes, but what is a Jack the Ripper sort of character anyway?
Well, Dan, he's a fellow who just can't help murdering.
Oh, I know, like a man with tough whiskers or a tender skin. You know, he can't help murdering himself every time he shaves. That is, unless he uses Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream. Yes, sir, man, with Mole, it's smooth, so smooth. It's slick, so slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tender skins. That's right. Mole is the cream you need if you have a wiry, hard-to-cut beard or a tender skin. Because it is heavier, Mole not only softens your whiskers, it stands them up straight, lets your razor take them right off. So you get a smooth, slick shave every time. Yes, you shave faster, closer, easier, and you shave painlessly with Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tender skins. And now for tonight's Mole mystery starring Arnold Moss, The Hands of Mr. Ottermole.
Have you ever thought you might like to kill someone? Have you ever thought someone might like to kill you? Not murder for the usual motives, you understand. Not murder for greed or hate or frustration. But a killing without reason, without motive. Murder of this kind happens so simply and so unaccountably. Two ordinary people are walking down the street, minding their own business, even as you or I, and suddenly, why, no one knows. One becomes a murderer, and the other becomes a victim. Take Mr. Wybrow, for example. Mr. Wybrow doesn't know it, but he's about to be murdered. Oh, he's just an ordinary fellow. Mr. Wybrow, walking home from work of a pleasant evening, strolling casually through the cobweb alleys of London's East End. It's the spring of 1890. And Mr. Wybrow has nothing more important on his mind than buying the evening paper.
King James, that's the report, Mr. Wybrow. Things are pretty quiet.
No murders or anything in the papers, huh?
Oh, one or two larcenies, but no killing, sir. It's a shame they can't schedule a good murder every 2 or 3 weeks. Helps the sale of papers, it does. People sure likes to read about murder.
For my part, I'm just as happy there aren't any murders. It's a good thing when people respect law and order.
Well, here's your paper, Mr. Wybrow. I'll see you tomorrow night.
But murder isn't something you just read about in the papers, Mr. Wybrow. Murder is something that happens to people, something final and violent. tomorrow night, other people coming home from work will find your name in the paper. And your death will help the sale of James's newspapers. For at this very moment, as you walk down Largo Street, a man has begun to follow you. This man following you, Mr. Wybrow, he isn't a bad man. In fact, he passes everywhere as a respectable man, as most criminals do. But the thought has come into his moldering mind he'd like to kill someone. And, being without conscience, he's going to do it. And then go home to tea. Yes, Mr. Wybrow, murderers do eat. The same sort of food you and I eat. Even the same sort of fish you've stopped in to buy on your way home from work, in accordance with Mrs. Wybrow's instructions.
Evening, Mr. Wybrow. What'll it be tonight?
The missus thought a little attic would be nice. Oh.
How's this one here, sir?
Kind of small, but I guess it'll be all right. Wrap it up for me, will you?
Right away.
Now you've got company, Mr. Wybrow. The man who's about to kill you is just coming into the same fish store. Don't turn away. Look at him. That's right. There's nothing unusual about him, is there? You've seen him before.
Nice night, isn't it, Mr. Ottermore? Haven't seen you around in some time. I guess it's because I've been coming home from the shop earlier.
Here's your attic, Mr. Wybrow. All wrapped and ready.
Very speedy of you. Just charge it, huh? I'll be in to pay you the first of next week. Oh, and good night to you, Mr. Ottermore.
Quiet but friendly sort of fellow, your murderer, isn't he, Mr. Wybrow? Yes, it's a friendly world. So take your fish and leave the market and go on to your rendezvous with death. You're almost home now, Mr. Wybrow, but don't hurry so. Take a look around you. Your last look at the world, and if you knew it, you'd look at it more closely. The more slowly you walk, the longer you'll enjoy the fragrant air of this evening, the longer you'll see the dreamy lamplight of little shops. Pause a minute before you cross Loyal Lane. Pause among the houses that shelter the useless and beaten of London's camp followers. Hear the music of the people in the streets. It's the last time, Mr. Wybrow, the very last time. There's only a minute or two on earth left for you. You've turned into your own street now. And right behind you is your murderer. Listen. Can't you hear something in his footfalls? Can't you hear something that cries out, "Beware, here comes death, here comes murder"? No. No, there's no warning in footfalls. They're neutral. The foot of villainy falls with the same note as the foot of honesty. All right, Mr. Wybrow. Go into your house.
Is that you, dear?
Yes, it's me, all right.
Did you remember to get the fish?
I remembered, all right.
Good. Put it on the table, then. I'll be ready with tea in just a minute. Oh, is that someone at the door, dear?
Yes, dear. I'll answer it.
Go away from that door. Don't touch it. Get as far away from it as possible. Go out of the back door, run to the garden, over the fence, call the neighbors, but don't touch that door. For on the other side is death.
Why, hello. I didn't expect to see you again tonight. Something wrong? Come in. Here, I'll get a chair for you. I say, what are you doing? Just, what are you doing?
Invite him to stay for a spot of tea.
say, Crane, is this all you've been able to find out about the Whitebrow murder? As editor of this paper, I expect...
Well, it's a baffling case, sir. There he was, strangled to death, and absolutely no one around could have done it.
Now, Mr. Crane, somebody must have been there.
Well, if you think it's so easy, let me be the editor for a while, and you be the reporter. Now, whoever did this murder disappeared like magic. Mr. Whitebrow was seen by the neighbors to enter his house at the usual time. Now, there was a policeman at the end of the street. He saw no one else enter or leave the house, but suddenly screams were heard. Then the policeman's whistle.
Well, the criminal must have got there some way. He couldn't just fly in and out. You better go over to police headquarters and see what they know.
Yeah, very well, sir.
Yes, Mr. Crane. It certainly is a baffling case. But this is only the beginning. Even now, Mr. Crane, as you're on your way to police headquarters, the killer you seek is stalking another victim. The murder of Mr. Whitebrow has only whetted the appetite of our killer. He wants to try it again and again, for he's found pleasure in killing, and his conscience doesn't bother him one little bit.
Falls on Act One of tonight's Mole Mystery, a mysterious killer is at large on the streets of London, and where he will strike next, nobody knows.
Why, Mr. Barnes, don't tell me you can't see a murder coming.
Well, no, Dan, that's practically impossible.
Not all the time. Why, some men can see murder coming every time they stand before the mirror to shave. And say, man, if that's how it is with you, chances are you have wiry whiskers or a tender skin. But you know shaving needn't be painful, not if you shave with Mole. The heavier brushless shaving cream. That's right. Mole is the heavier cream that gives you a smooth, slick shave. Because Mole is heavier, it not only softens your whiskers, it stands them up straight and lets your razor cut them off close and clean. With Mole, you shave faster, closer, easier, and you shave painlessly. Try it. See if you don't say, it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tender skins.
And now this is Jeffrey Barnes returning you to Act Two of The Hands of Mr. Ottermole.
Mr. Whitebrow in London of 1890 was called the London Strangling Horror because it was something more than murder. It was motiveless, and there was an air of black magic about it. For no one had seen or heard the killer, and it was as though he disappeared into thin air. And now, as the sun fades and night deepens on a strange dark street, the killer prowls again, and victim number two has run out of time.
Law, listen to that. I've no notion it's reached that hour. I've kept you out too late again, Janie.
Oh, go on. No, it's you that should be getting to bed, what with your work to go to so early. Let's put you on the tram car here. I've only half a block to run home.
You'll be all right?
Oh, why shouldn't I? Only half a block to go home, really.
That strangling the other day.
Oh, don't you worry about me. Oh, listen. Here comes the tram car now.
Oh, it's hard to say goodnight.
No, but I'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, same time. Hurry up now. Get on board.
Good night, Janie. Best love.
Good night to you. Night.
That's your last goodbye, Janie. Your very last. For down the street in the shadow of a doorway is the strangler. Even as you walk down the street, his footsteps have begun to echo along with yours. Do you hear them, Janie? Nothing menacing about them, is there? Then why do you feel frightened all of a sudden? Why have you started to walk faster? Are you afraid of a pair of footsteps? Well,
You're right to be afraid of him, so put your head down and run. Don't look back. Don't look back. Janie, don't stop. Don't even speak to him.
You, I don't know what's wrong with me. I started to walk fast. Scared, I guess I was, but I don't guess anybody can be scared of you. Hey, what do you think you're doing? Hey, what do you think you are anyway? Let go.
Constable McDonald, a young woman in the prime of her youth, brutally strangled and in front of her own home. I say it's rotten. My newspaper is demanding action. The strangler must be found.
Then you find him, Mr. Crane. There's absolutely no clue. Once again, he's disappeared like a whiff of smoke.
Don't worry. I'll find him if I have to spend the rest of my life doing it.
That's only murder number two, Mr. Crane. There are to be more of these stranglings, and each will be committed at a time when the streets are empty of any perceptible or possible murderer. Wherever people meet, in the streets, markets, shops, they discuss the one topic, murder. They bolt their doors and windows at the first fall of dusk, and they yield to apprehension and dismay. For by the whim of one man with a pair of powerful hands, the structure of their daily life is shaken.
You mark my words, Al. It's them gypsies what's responsible for these murders. Them Eastern fellas. They know plenty of tricks. I've heard sailors tell of how they make themselves invisible. How they have potions that make anything possible. The only way to stop these stranglings is to drive them gypsies out of London.
So panic rules the population. And no one in London feels safe unless there's a policeman somewhere around. But policemen are only human. The same as the rest of us. It's possible to strangle a policeman, too. And then, where does safety lie? That's right. Victim number three is Constable MacDonald, who stops to talk with an old friend.
Hey! Oh, it's only you. Give me a start. All night long I've been walking this here deserted street. Every once in a while a stranger approaches the same as you've done. And I tightened my grip on my nightstick. I kept looking around so much I've got a crick in the back of my neck. Maybe if you'd just run your hand over it a little, it would help some. Yeah, right here, that's where it goes. No, easy. Here. What are you doing? Let go of me.
London strangling horrors reach three, they're almost over. But there's to be one more. And no one is ever to know the identity of the murderer. That is, no one but two men. The murderer himself and our young newspaper friend, Mr. Crane. And fate has a strange trick to play on Mr. Crane, as fate sometimes does.
Sergeant! Sergeant!
Oh, evening, Mr. Crane.
I've a few questions I'd like to ask you, Sergeant. These three stranglings, you discovered all of the bodies, didn't you?
No, not exactly. I discovered Mr. Wybrow's body, and I discovered Constable MacDonald's body. The girl, I got there just after she'd been found.
You didn't see anything? You didn't see anybody?
I'll swear on my life, there was no one around.
But how could the killer get away so quickly? Is it possible that he could have hidden right at the scene of the crime?
No, sir. We went over every bit of the Wybrows. No one could have hidden there. MacDonald was killed in the street. No one could hide there, of course. As for the girl, it was unlikely anyone could hide nearby with a crowd around.
That's what I want to know, Sergeant. Did a crowd form immediately after each murder?
You know how people are, Mr. Crane. Let them hear a policeman's whistle and they all come running to see what's up. Do you think that has something to do with the murder, sir?
might have and it might not. Thank you very much, Sergeant. I'll commend you to the inspector.
These questions you're asking, Mr. Crane, what are they leading to? What idea is trying to shape itself in your mind? Do you think you're going to uncover the identity of the strangler? Men with more intelligence than you have been trying to solve it and failed. And the closer you come to finding out the killer, the closer you come to your own death, Mr. Crane. So don't think about it. Walk down the street, go into the music hall, where you can forget all these questions of murder.
Here you are, Mr. Crane. Ham sandwich and a glass of ale.
Oh, just a minute, waiter. Look at this ham, why, it's nothing but fat.
Well, I didn't make the sandwich, sir.
Oh, now look here. Are you trying to tell me that this establishment isn't responsible for its food? After all, the ham is there. Somebody had to put it there. It just didn't fly in by itself and... By George, that's it.
That's what, Mr. Crane?
Oh, it's you, Mr. Editor. Sit down. I think I've solved the mystery of the strangling murders.
What? What then?
Yes. I just saw a vision in my ham sandwich.
A vision?
How did the ham get into this sandwich?
Oh, you fool. Somebody put it there.
Precisely. And three persons have been strangled. Therefore, somebody had to be there to do it.
You have a genius for the obvious.
Yes, and it's obvious the only way the murderer could escape was either by running away...
Yes.
...or by standing still.
Standing still?
Standing still so he wouldn't be conspicuous.
Wait a minute. Where are you going?
Out into the street, sir. Out into the street to discover the man who could stand still the best.
This is Jeffrey Barnes again. In just a moment, we'll bring you Act 3 of The Hands of Mr. Ottermole.
When you have dandruff, you might just as well try to combat it with plain water as with many ordinary hair preparations. For such products, simply remove loose dandruff, and you can do that with plain water. To do more, to fight dandruff effectively, use Double Dandrine. For Double Dandrine is a scientific product that does what most ordinary hair preparations can't do. It goes to work on your scalp and actually kills on contact the germ that many outstanding authorities contend is a cause of a common type of dandruff. Even in severe cases, results with Double Dandrine have been remarkable. Now, the reason for Double Dandrine's astonishing effectiveness is that it contains a special ingredient called Alzan, an active antiseptic so amazingly efficient many hospitals use it. So stop trying to combat dandruff with preparations that can't compare with Double Dandrine. If you're not completely satisfied, return the empty bottle and get your money back. Buy Double Dandrine at your druggist's. Ham sandwich has told you a good deal about the strangler, Mr. Crane. You're getting very close to him now. As you leave the music hall and think over and over to yourself who can stand still best and attract the least attention, the answer comes to you. Why are you being so heroic, Mr. Crane? You're on a dark, lonely street now. It isn't necessary for you to bring the murderer in single-handedly. Look, there's a police station across the street. Run over to get help. No? All right, then. Go on by yourself. Be a hero. Snuff out your own life merely to prove that a vision you saw in a ham sandwich is the correct one. Go ahead. Turn the corner now and confront the strangler.
Good evening.
Oh, evening, Mr. Crane.
Have you dug up any new evidence about the murder since I spoke to you the other day?
No, nor has anyone else.
Really? Now... As man to man, tell me why. Just why did you kill all those innocent people, Police Sergeant Ottermole?
You can't believe I did it.
It couldn't be anybody else. You were present or nearby when each of the bodies was found. There wasn't time for anyone to escape the scene of the crimes. Therefore, the strangler escaped by standing still. And who could stand still? Who could be more inconspicuous in a crowd than a policeman? Than you, Sergeant Ottermole.
You think that's pretty clever, don't you?
You won't tell anybody about this?
Stand back. I thought you might get rough, so I brought along this gun. Try anything and I'll use it.
All right. Don't worry, then. I'm not going to try to get away, Mr. Crane. I know when the game's up.
But there's still one thing I've got to know. Why? Why did you do it?
I don't know exactly. But I've got an idea. Everybody knows we can't control the workings of our minds, don't they, Mr. Crane?
So they say.
That's right. Ideas come into our minds without asking, yet everybody's supposed to be able to control his body. Why? We get our minds from Lord knows where. Maybe from people dead 100 years before we were born.
Yes? Yes, go on.
Well, might we get our bodies in the same way? Can't ideas live in nerve and muscle as well as in brains? Couldn't it be that parts of our bodies aren't really us? And couldn't ideas come into those parts all of a sudden? Now take my hands. Look at them. See how big and strong they are. Well, couldn't hands like these suddenly get the idea to choke things like this?
I call me. I call you.
I told you they get ideas. Ideas to choke things. Give me that gun, Mr. Crane.
You're breaking my wrist.
Drop that gun.
Big beast. I shot you twice. Why don't you die?
But it's my hands that strangle you, Mr. Crane.
No.
My hands.
No.
My hands. Mr. Crane.
The next morning, two men were found in the same street. Mr. Crane, the reporter, Mr. Otomo, the police sergeant. But very much the same in one important respect. They were both very dead. Yes, and the strangler has been found out. But that's not the end. For fate still has its ironical prank to play on Mr. Crane. Poor Mr. Crane. 6 months after his death, a proclamation was made by the Lord Mayor of London.
Whereas the stranglings in London's East End suddenly and strangely came to a halt, it can only be concluded that the strangler died or was killed. In consideration of certain evidence, it has been decided that the strangler was undoubtedly a certain reporter named James N. Crane. And it is poetic justice of the most exalted kind that this strangler himself finally met his death by strangling. Therefore, I have ordered a special bronze medal struck in memory of the man who freed London of this horror and gave his life in so doing. Police Sergeant Ottermole.
In memory of Police Sergeant Ottermole. Now, this is Jeffrey Barnes again, inviting you to be with us next week when we present Patricia Wentworth's In the Balance, starring Gin Amici.
The original music for the Mole Mystery Theater is composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. The Hands of Mr. Ottermole was written by Thomas Burke and adapted for radio by L.K. Hoffman. Arnold Moss was featured in tonight's program. This is Dan Seymour saying goodnight until next Friday at this same time when the Mystery Theater presents In the Balance.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. the National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. From Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case transcribed from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles. And 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. From the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on facts. Names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, Play for Keeps.
At 5 minutes past midnight on December 12th, several years ago, Sheriff Bob Smithers of Bradshaw County, Texas, staged a raid on a gambling establishment located on a country road. But there were no patrons in the house, and the sheriff's face grew dark red as he and the local constable failed to find any evidence.
There's nothing in the upstairs room either, Sheriff.
You're sure of that, huh, Jim?
Not even a deck of cards.
See, Sheriff, like I told you, I quit the racket. Yet this is the fourth time this year you rousted me out of bed.
I know you're operating, Walton. And I'm going to get you for it. You're not going to milk the citizens of this county. Not while I'm sheriff.
Look, sheriff, this happens to be my house. Warrant or no warrant, you finished your business here. How about getting out?
I guess we might as well go, Sheriff.
No, Jim. We're going to stay a minute. I want to talk to Walton. And you.
About what?
I was sure of this raid tonight, Jim. Dead sure. Just like I've been sure the last three times, because only you and me ever knew about them. I didn't tell nobody but you, Jim. You, the constable.
Sounds like he's accusing you of tipping me off, Dunn.
I know he tipped you, Walton.
You better watch what you're saying, Bob.
All that talk about law and order and wanting to uphold him. Let me see your wallet, Jim. Take it out and let me see it.
Now, wait a minute, Sheriff.
You shut up! Come on, Jim. I want to see if you're carrying the kind of money an honest man gets for being a peace officer.
What I carry on me is my own business.
Why, you cheap two-bit snake.
Nothing cheap about a few hundred once in a while. Be smart, Sheriff. Get a few for yourself.
Why don't you listen to him, Sheriff? He's talking sense.
Come on, both of you. I'm taking you in.
You can't make anything stick.
Maybe not. But I'm going to make this county too hot for both of you. I'm going to run you out of it.
Keep your hands off me, Sheriff.
You're under arrest.
Grab him, Walton.
I got
him. Just hold him, fool, while I get his gun.
I got him.
There.
Dunn, you killed him.
No, you killed him. You grabbed his gun and killed him. He was after you, Walton. I got a gun of my own, and I'm the constable.
Are you setting me up for a frame?
Not necessarily, Walton. It's up to you. His body could be moved out of here.
What's your play? What do you want?
No more chicken mash. 50% of your take, and you can go right on operating.
With him dead, you crazy fool?
You're forgetting something, Walton. I'm top dog now, and investigating this murder will be my job until a new sheriff is appointed. But I don't think I'm going to be able to solve it.
The body of Sheriff Smithers was found the next morning, dumped in a ditch by the side of an old wagon road. During the next few days, Constable Jim Dunn conducted a seemingly honest but fruitless investigation, even following the efficient peace officer's routine of making use of the state lab facilities at Austin. But citizens of Bradshaw were not satisfied, nor was the editor of the Bradshaw Times. Clippings of his editorials were on file with Captain Stinson of the Texas Rangers, and the captain sent for Ranger Jace Pearson.
Want to see me, Captain?
Yeah, Jay, sit down. There's no acting sheriff appointed by the court of Bradshaw County here, Jace. I think you better take over.
About the killing of Sheriff Smithers?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to. I knew Smithers.
See, that's right. You worked with him about 5 years ago.
When he first took office. Cleaned that county up in 3 months and cleaned it good.
Well, it doesn't look like it stayed clean, Jace. Not according to this editorial clipping from the Bradshaw Times.
I've read it.
It's going to be a tough one, Jace. No clue to the killer, and the trail has had a couple of days to cool off.
Well, then I better get going before it gets any cooler. You'll hear from me.
Jace?
Yeah, Captain?
I just want to remind you, whoever did it doesn't hesitate to kill a man wearing a badge.
I reached Bradshaw in the early morning. The town was waking up, and the Bradshaw Times was turning out its biweekly edition. I went in to see the editor, Frank Carlin.
So you read my editorials, huh? Well, I'm glad to know somebody's reading.
Yeah, you got readers, all right. People have been clipping them out and mailing them into our headquarters.
Yeah, I guess there's always a handful of people to hold on. Wonder what the world would do without them. Everybody was so burned the day of the killing. Then in 48 hours, they want to forget it. Yeah, it's always that way.
How about the constable, Jim Dunn?
Oh, he's all right, I guess. But he's only been constable for a year. He just doesn't have the experience. It'll take the court a couple more days to decide on a new sheriff. I better knock out a story on you rangers coming in. Might wake the people up again.
I'd rather you didn't, Mr. Carlin. I'll be around, and they'll know soon enough.
See what you mean. Want me to lay off the editorials for a while?
If you don't mind.
You know, Sheriff and I are on different sides of the fence politically, but he was an honest man, and I liked him. I got a headline back there, all set and gathering dust. It says, Sheriff's Killer Caught. Ranger, give me a chance to use it.
I found a place to park my horse trailer and put charcoal in the pasture. Then I headed for the constable's office and met Constable Jim Dunn.
They're all the reports in my investigations, Ranger. You think I haven't done a good job, maybe those will change your mind. I even checked ballistics with the Austin lab.
My being here isn't a criticism of you, Mr. Dunn. I'm here because I was sent until a new sheriff is appointed and to give you help.
I've done everything possible. I've questioned almost 100 people. I've checked alibis on more than a dozen possible suspects. It's all there.
Yeah. Everything's here. Everything except the murderer. And that's the only thing I'm interested in seeing, Mr. Dunn. A little cooperation between us might clean it up.
I'm sorry I blew, Ranger. It's been getting under my skin. This murder could have been committed by anybody. Some bum from a hobo jungle, some drunk anybody.
We can't arrest anybody. We've got to arrest somebody. Somebody definite. Now, exactly where was the body found?
Old wagon road bypasses town about 2 miles north.
Is it fit for a car?
Yeah, but you got to go roundabout to get to it. Almost 11 miles. You won't find nothing there, though.
I'd like to take a look anyhow. Can't we cut cross-country on horses?
Yeah, shorter, if you want it.
I want to. My horse is in a pasture. I'll meet you at the edge of town in 5 minutes.
The body was found just a little further on. You can see the road now.
Not much of a road left.
No use for it anymore.
Sheriff must have had some reason for using it if he came way out here.
Hey, here we are.
Oh, boy. Oh, charcoal. Oh, boy.
Hey, Sheriff's car was found right over here by the side of the road.
Where was he?
Lying right beside it. Been dead about 7-8 hours when he was found.
Who found him?
Cowpoke, looking for some strays.
That's lucky. Otherwise, the body might have been here for a few days or even weeks before somebody came across it.
Yeah.
You get pictures of the position of the car and the body?
Of course I did. Anything else?
Yeah, any exhibits, cast of footprints, anything like that?
No. When I got the call, I brought a bunch of men out with me. I was excited, and I didn't think to stop them from tramping around.
I can see why you'd be upset. Well, if there was anything to find, it's a cinch it isn't here now. Weather would have wiped it out if your men hadn't.
You want to go back to town?
Yeah. I want to look at the car.
Get up.
How about the exhibits from the sheriff's body?
I sent the bullets and the gun in. Your lab checked it. Verified it was the sheriff's own gun.
I'm talking about the clothes he was wearing. You got those, haven't you?
Sure I got them. I got all the evidence there was.
You should have sent it all in. I want to look at that stuff, too. Well, let's step it up. Come on, Charlie.
Get up! Get up.
Here's everything, all tagged. Everything the sheriff was wearing when he was killed.
I see. And this the shirt he was wearing?
You see the blood and bullet holes, don't you?
Yeah.
How come your lab didn't find any prints on the gun when I sent it in? It
didn't even have the sheriff's own prints. It was wiped clean. Well, this is kind of odd.
What?
Well, the sheriff was shot twice, and they dug one slug out of him. The other one passed clean through.
Yeah, according to the coroner's report, one slug hit his collarbone. That stopped it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The course of the bullets. Both shots fired into the left side, just above the kidney. But the one that came through came out the right side of his shirt collar here, right through his neck.
What about it?
It's a funny course for a bullet to take, unless the man who fired the gun was lying down and fired up at the sheriff.
Yeah, that's what I figured, too. They must have had a fight for the gun. He got it, but the sheriff knocked him down and...
No, that isn't the way it happened.
How do you know?
Because the sheriff wouldn't half turn his back on a man who'd just taken his gun. Besides, these powder burns show the gun was being held right against the shirt when it was fired.
What do you think happened then?
The sheriff must have been in some position where he was bent over forward, which he wouldn't be unless somebody was holding him in that position. Here, stand in front of me for a minute. Now, you're back toward me.
What are you going to do?
Slip one hand under your arms and then up behind your head in a half Nelson and twist your other arm behind you in an arm lock. And bend you over forward like this. The sheriff was held like I'm holding you now. The bullets were pumped into him. See what I mean?
That's just a guess.
It's a guess I'm going to back up. And if the sheriff was held in a half Nelson and an arm lock, it tells us something else. That there were two men in on the murder. Unless the killer had three hands and used the third one to fire the gun.
That's pretty smart figuring, Ranger.
Only because it's the kind of figuring I've been doing for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Are these the photos that were taken at the scene?
Yeah, the sheriff's body and the car.
The car, the body moved any before these were taken?
Nope. The car was right there, with the sheriff flat on his face beside it.
And less than 2 feet away from it. His right side toward the car.
Yeah.
The bullet that passed through the sheriff came out on his right side. That means it should have hit the car. But there's no mark.
I don't see that. That helps us any.
It helps plenty, Dunn. It tells us the sheriff wasn't killed out there. He was killed someplace else and brought out there.
In just a moment, we will continue with Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson.
It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. Tonight, enjoy 90 minutes of great entertainment on The Big Show featuring Jimmy Durante, Ethel Merman, Fred Allen, and your unpredictable hostess, Tallulah Bankhead. Then Theater Guild on the Air brings you Joan Fontaine and Ray Milland in the delightful comedy, The Major and the Minor. Later, enjoy the sparkling premiere performance of The Eddie Cantor Show featuring recorded visits with such great show people as Al Jolson, Ted Lewis, Sophie Tucker, and Bill Robinson. Tonight, it's The Big Show, Theater Guild on the Air, and The Eddie Cantor Show. Hear all three on NBC.
We continue now with Tales of the Texas Rangers. And tonight's case, Play for Keeps. An authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
I knew that Sheriff Smithers had been killed by two men. And that his body had been moved after the killing. But it wasn't nearly enough. It was evening before I figured out my next move. A move I didn't like to make. Evening, ma'am. Remember me?
Why, it's Jace Pearson, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. Been a long time, Mrs. Smithers.
Oh, come in, Jace. Come in. I suppose you know about Bob.
Yes, ma'am. And that's why I'm down here. I came by to pay my respects.
Funny thing. First time Bob brought you through that door. I never reckoned you might be back someday. Looking for a man who killed him.
I wish it could have been for another reason, ma'am. But Bob kept things working so well here, there seldom was any reason for a ranger to come visiting in Bradshaw County.
I know how you fellas keep working along. Can I offer you a bite to eat? Please, Jace.
Well, that'd be real fine, Miss Smithers. I knew it might help her and me if she could keep a little busy with her hands doing woman things in the kitchen. And I tried to eat, but kept remembering the man who'd sat across this same table from me 5 years before. Big, honest, stubborn, and unafraid.
It's mighty nice of you to stop by, Jace. Bob would have been happy to see you sitting here again. He always said a man with a good appetite was right with the world.
Ma'am, I guess Jim Dunn has already asked you, but do you have any ideas about who might have killed Bob?
Oh, no. Everything went so well for a few years. All I know is last year or so, Bob was upset about gambling.
He after anybody in particular?
A man named Walton, Lou Walton, has a big house on the South Road out of town. Bob always says it was a gambling house, but he could never catch Walton.
You mean he raided the place?
A couple of times. Last time was the night he was killed.
Dunn didn't tell me about that.
Bob was killed after he left there. Walton's, I mean. Dunn said they didn't find anything, so Bob started back for town. But he never got home.
Mrs. Smithers.
Hmm?
I have to ask a favor. A favor I don't like to ask.
I want to help, Jace, every way I can.
I want your permission to have Bob's body exhumed for further examination.
Is it necessary?
I'm not satisfied with the examination that was made here.
All right, Jace.
I'd like to have a more thorough examination made for headquarters. I'm sending them the clothes Bob was wearing for lab check, and I don't want anybody to know about it for now.
All right. You're going to get him, aren't you, Jace?
I'm going to try awful hard, ma'am.
Well, howdy, Ranger. I've been waiting for you. Thought maybe you might have turned in for the night.
I'm going to in a few minutes. I just came back to pick up the clothing exhibits.
Well, I locked them away again.
I'll dig them out. I want to send them on to Cam Mabry for lab tests.
Well, all right.
I'll give you a receipt for them.
Okay.
Don?
Yeah?
In those reports of yours, I didn't see any mention of a man named Lou Walton.
Why should there be?
I understand that Walton's a gambler and that you helped Smithers raid his place the night Smithers was killed.
Now, here are the exhibits. You're thinking way out of line on Walton. His alibi's airtight.
According to who?
According to me. I was with him all night after Smithers left the place.
You didn't come back to town with the sheriff?
No, I stayed at Walton's.
Why?
Because the sheriff asked me to stay there. We didn't find anything, but the sheriff figured if I hung around, somebody might show up or call up looking for a game. And I'd be able to get him some evidence in. Anything else you want to know?
No. I guess that lets Walton out. I'll take these things.
Sure. Go ahead.
See you tomorrow, Dunn.
Number, please.
Oak Hill, 243. Walton, Dunn, now get those people out and shut down.
Why? What's wrong?
That ranger's too smart. I try to make things look good for myself, and, well, I guess I made him look too good.
Well, how much does he know?
All he's gonna know. You just close down and stand pat until he wears himself out.
The sheriff's body was dug up in the examiner's report sent on to Austin. Headquarters also had the exhibits I'd gotten from Dunn. By late afternoon of the next day, Captain Stinson telephoned me long distance.
Got a complete report from the lab, Jace.
Go ahead, Captain.
You were right about the position of the body when the shots were fired. Autopsy report shows the organs were pierced in a manner that'd be possible only if the sheriff were bent over forward.
Good. Anything else?
Yeah. That shirt you sent up. Lab thinks Smithers was killed indoors.
Why?
Some lint stuck to the blood and held when it dried. Analysis indicates it comes from a fabric used in expensive carpeting. Violet color.
Thanks, Captain. That may be enough to wind this up. Then you're convinced that Walton was running a gambling joint, Mr. Carlin.
Was and is. I swear to it. But nobody's been able to prove it. You know how suckers are. They lose their shirts and keep their mouths shut. Think they're in on a smart thing, and they help the racketeers to cover up.
Then Walton must have been tipped off that he was being raided.
Part of the racket. They pay off and get tipped off.
You ever been in Walton's house?
No.
You know anybody who has been there?
Well, no secret. The newspaper men gamble more than good for him. My linotype man plays horses, I know. Pete.
I'll be there in a minute. Howdy, Ranger.
Howdy.
Pete, you ever been in Lou Walton's place? Oh, come on, I don't stall. Tell her, Ranger. It's important.
Well, yeah, I've been there once or twice.
I only want to know one thing. You notice any carpeting in the house?
Carpeting? Oh, sure. The house is like a palace. Wall-to-wall carpet all over the place.
What color?
Well, it's a kind of a purple, I'd say.
How about saying violet?
Yeah, I guess that's what it's called.
You got something, Ranger?
Yeah. I'm going to wake up the nearest judge and get a search warrant for Walton. You better brush the dust off that headline you told me about. I think you're going to get a chance to use it.
I was wondering when you get around to me, Ranger. Seems like everybody who wears a badge just loves to poke his nose into my life.
I wouldn't worry about your nose, Walton. If you want to be smart, watch out for your mouth.
I didn't mean anything, Ranger. Just that a man ought to have a little privacy.
And you love the death cells at Huntsville. They're real private.
Well, I always cooperated. The constable, Jim Dunn, he'll tell you that.
I bet he would. Nice carpeting you got here. I like the color.
Hey, let me get you a drink or something, Ranger. All good stuff. I don't have anything but the best. You know the old saying, the best is none too good.
Walton, there's been a strong cleaning fluid used on a piece of this rug. One spot faded just a little.
Well, I spilled some wine. I had a party one night.
The night the Sheriff Smithers was here last?
No, before that.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Nobody was here the night Smithers came.
No, nobody. The constable, he stayed. Stayed most of the night after the sheriff left.
Yeah, so he told me.
Let me show you the rest of the house. Upstairs.
No, thanks. I just want to look at the walls in this room. They're sure pretty. You know, at Huntsville, they don't have pretty walls like these. Just cold concrete and steel bars.
What do you keep talking about, Huntsville?
I'll tell you as soon as I stand up on this chair and rip off this new piece of wallpaper.
Don't. They have no right to.
Just looking for this small bullet hole papered over. Of course, you know that one bullet went right through the sheriff.
The hole was repapered because a heavy picture fell. The nail made the hole.
38 caliber nail?
I'm
going to have this rug ripped up and sent to my lab, Walton. No cleaning fluid made will wipe out all of a blood trace. Even a drop is enough to hang you.
I didn't do it, I tell you. Dunn shot him.
Huh?
It was Dunn. Dunn shot him.
Hold your wrists out.
You'll never get those on me.
You bet wrong this time, gambler. Now get up. I'm taking you in. I took him through town to the county jail. And I walked over to the constable's office, but Dunn wasn't there. I had to find him quick before he knew I had Walton. I headed back for the jail, and as I turned into the street, I saw something move in the shadows. There was another car, not far from mine, the constable's car, and Dunn was getting into it.
Dunn, wait a minute! Get out of the way, Pete! Get back, please!
Punctured my tires. Unit 10 to KTXA. Unit 10 to KTXA.
KTXA to Unit 10. Go ahead, Unit 10.
Unit 10 convinced Constable Jim Dunn is subject sought in killing of Sheriff Smithers, Bradshaw County, attempting getaway headed north on State Highway 19 from Bradshaw. Alert Highway Patrol and all units for complete roadblock of area. Order no further radio communication.
subject in Constable's marked car equipped with shortwave receiver.
We'll do, Unit 10.
Unit 10's car out of commission. We'll attempt to commandeer another car for pursuit. Unit 10, 10-4.
KDXA, Austin.
Step out of the way, please. Step back, please. Step back. Come on, Charcoal. Let's hope Dunn heard that call.
Gamble. The last part of my call had been a plan. A plan I wanted Dunn to hear. He'd know he couldn't get more than 15 or 20 miles before he was blocked unless he took some back road. And I'd seen him take a north turn out of town toward the wagon road he'd dumped the sheriff's body on. It was 11 miles for him by car, 2 miles cross country for me. I raked Charcoal all the way, reached the road, and rope dragged a couple of dead logs across it. We finished just in time. I heard the whine of a car coming over the rise in the rough road as the first glimmer of the headlights stabbed the darkness. I tied Chaco back in the trees and dropped in the brush to wait.
This is the end of the road, Don. Don't try backing up. Now you haven't got any tires. I'm giving you a chance to surrender, Don.
You get your chances, Ranger.
You missed, Don. Now I'm coming around the car to get you. You want to shoot it out? Let's go.
Oh, wait a minute. Go, Ranger. Don't shoot. Don't shoot. I'll drop my gun. See? I ain't armed.
Come here.
I ain't armed.
Neither was Smithers when you lifted his gun and killed him with it. Good thing for Texas all constables aren't like you. Come on. Walton's waiting for you at the jail. Looks like you'll be partners again at Huntsville.
The following week, the headlines of the Bradshaw Times read, Sheriff Killers Caught. Though Jim Dunn protested his innocence, Lou Walton's confession and evidence submitted by the Rangers convinced the court of Dunn's guilt. Both were sentenced to life imprisonment at Huntsville.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers.
Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Cattle Drive. The cast included Tony Barrett, Tom Holland, Byron Kane, Peter Leeds, and Gene Bates. Technical advisor was Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
Next, it's The Big Show. All this and Tallulah Bankhead, too. On NBC.